And so Ahasuerus says, Vashti, come so I can introduce... No, I'm not going anywhere, she says. I don't feel good. I feel fat. He thought, what? What am I gonna do? I asked my wife to come. I'm embarrassed in front of all these people. He talks to his counselors. You know what the counselors say? Banish her. Because if she is allowed to do this, then all of the wives in the kingdom will figure they can do that. I thought, that's not a bad idea, you know?
Aloha, and welcome to Words of New Hope with Dr. Wayne Cordero, pastor of New Hope Christian Fellowship in Honolulu. Ever wish you could make a difference in the world, or in your home, or on the job, a difference for all eternity? Well, today Pastor Wayne will tell us the story of one lady who saved her entire nation by making one simple choice. Here he is with a message entitled, The Power of One Choice.
Would you take out your notes with me as we continue in our series, One Made a Difference. One Made a Difference. We're going to talk about three singular decisions that each of us will need to make in our lifetimes. And these are simple. And we're gonna try to take what is complicated and get it real simple. But one, the power of one. A few years ago, a jetliner crashed in France. When they found out what the reason was, it was a little cargo door that didn't close just right. The wind caught it, caused some suction, and then loss of air pressure tumbled the jetliner to the peril of over 300 people. One bolt would have made the difference. One bolt was enough to bring the mighty jetliner down. It's said that if Aaron Burr would have received one more electoral vote, he could have become president. One vote brought Texas into the Union. Joan of Arc was one woman saved France. Martin Luther, just one man who made a choice to stand up against the corruption in the church, nailed 95 theses or corruptions that he saw to the Wittenberg door, and it altered the history of Europe. You take a look at what one person can do by making one vital choice. If we link them all together, all the right choices, we can change the world. And it will influence people all over. One choice. One. One person can make a difference. Consider Joseph or Moses. One choice. David or Ruth. Paul the Apostle. One person and God can make a difference. You. One choice can make a difference. Sometimes people say, you know, following God is just all these do's and don'ts. Really, it's not. God gives you one choice at a time for that moment. And as you make it right by hearing Him, you can change the world. It's one choice at a time. Not millions, one choice at a time. And sometimes we think the things of God are just far too complicated and we bail out. I know people who take something designed to be simple and make it into something complicated. I like to do it the other way around, to take stuff complicated and make it simple. Doesn't that sound better? 2 Corinthians 11:3, so did Paul the Apostle. He said this. He said, I'm concerned that even as the devil deceived Eve by his craftiness, that he would lead your minds astray from the purity and simplicity of your devotion to Christ. In other words, he's saying, if the devil can get stuff to become complicated and move you from that which is pure and simple in your devotion to Christ, he will lead you astray. And it says basically this, anything that's other than something pure and simple, man, rethink it. So don't let it get complicated. In fact, when things designed to be simple gets complicated, it can get pretty crazy. I'm going to just to show you how that can be done, how ludicrous the results are. I'm going to take something designed to be very simple and make it into something complicated. Are you ready? Hey, you've heard the story, a simple story of Cinderella, where she falls in love with this handsome young prince, and because he kind of loses track of her the next day, but she dropped her slipper, remember that? And so he goes and finds who fit this slipper, and when he finds it fits Cinderella, well, they fall in love and live happily ever after. Very, very simple story. But I'm going to take this story and turn it around to show you what happens when something designed to be simple gets really complicated. So you know how sometimes you get excited and you turn your words around? So instead of saying movie, you say voomy, downtown, town down. Well, I'm going to take this story and turn all the words around. And so to see what happens when something is designed to be simple gets complicated. So it's no longer the story of Cinderella, it's a story of Rinderella. Now you ready? You're gonna have to help one another on this. All right, here we go. It goes like this. Once upon a time, in a corn funtry, that's foreign country, all right? Okay, I'm losing you right out of the block, so stay with me. Once upon a time in a corn funtry, there lived a beautiful young girl, and her name was Rinderella. Now, Rinderella lived with her mugly other and her two sad blisters. Well, also in this corn funtry, there lived a pransome young Hintz. Now, this pransome young Hintz was going to throw a bansy fall. That's fancy ball. Fancy fall. So he invited all the people from Riles a Mound, especially the pitch people. Rich people, stay with me. Rich people. Well, Rinderella's mugly other and two sad blisters, they got all excited. They went town down to buy themselves some Drancy Festas to go to the Bansy Fall. But Rinderella couldn't go, so she just cat down and scried. Hoo boo, hoo boo, hoo boo, she scried. Everything's backwards in this one. While she was kitten there scrying, hoo boo, hoo boo, all of a sudden, whoop, there appeared before her a Gary Mudfather. And he touched her with his wagic wand. Whoop, he said, you will go to the Bansy Fall. And all of a sudden, there appeared before her a Hage Boach with Hicks White Horses to take her off to the Bansy Fall. But, said the Gary Mudfather, you must be back before midnight, otherwise I'll turn you into a tumpkin. Rinderella said, K.O., Gary Mudfather, K.O. You got that one, huh? Okay, good, all right. Good, good. Well, Rinderella got all excited. She jumped into the Hage Boach with Hicks White Horses and went off to the Bansy Fall. But what she didn't know was when she arrived there, there was a pransome young Hintz watching her from behind a wooden hindo. And he said to himself, ooh, self, that chick is our fout. Whoa. Well, they nanced and they nanced till midnight and they lel and fuv. Fell in love. Well, all of a sudden, the knock struck midnight, boom. And Rinderella said, my, oh, and she staced down the rares. And when she beached the rodham, she slopped her dripper. The following day, the pransome young Hintz rode throughout the corn funtry looking for this beautiful young girl that slopped her dripper. Well, he finally got to Rinderella's house and he tried it on her mugly other. It fitn't it. Didn't fit. So he tried it on her two sad blisters. It still fitn't it. So then he tried it on Rinderella. Floop, whoop, it fitn't it. It was just the sight rise. Well, they lel and fuv again. They got married and lived heavily after upwards. Well, the story of the Maury is this. If you ever get invited to go to a Bansy Fall and you lel and fuv with a pransome young Hintz, don't forget, slop your drippers. Now some of you say, well, what does that have to do with Jesus? Nothing. Not a thing. It's just a fun, stupid poem. Anyway, so what God has designed is to keep things simple, not to get it complicated. And sometimes we take what God has given to us, we make it so complicated that no one wants to be a part of that. And that's really ludicrous. Well, one woman who made a choice that changed the nations is a lady named Esther. Now, that wasn't her name at first. Her name was Hadassah. She was a Jewess. It all started in 586 BC. When Nebuchadnezzar swept down into Israel, took the Jewish people captive, overran all of Israel. When they went up to Babylon, where his reign was, when he took the people up there, he changed all of their names around. He changed like Daniel's to Belteshazzar, and Azariah, Mishael, Hananiah was Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. Well, several years later, about 40 years later, a king comes down from the Persian Empire, overruns Nebuchadnezzar's empire, and now this Persian king takes over. His name was Cyrus the Great. Cyrus the Great writes an edict saying, hey, I don't want the Jews to be in captivity up here. You guys can go home whenever you want to, and stamps it. Well, about 30 years later, the redeployment starts to go back, but some of the Jews decide, because of the embrace of the Persians, we're just going to have some Jewish colonies in Persia. And that's what some of them did. Cyrus's next in line for the throne was a man named Darius. Now, Darius is one of the kings of the Medes and Persians. He wants to take over not only Nebuchadnezzar's realm, which is modern-day Iran, Iraq, etc., but he wants to go through Turkey and then take Greece. In 490 BC now, Darius actually goes down to Marathon in Greece. The next stop after Marathon would be Athens. Now, there is a huge battle that takes place, and he is defeated at the Battle of Marathon, 490. The Grecians are so excited, they stop the onslaught of the Persians. One guy runs from Marathon all the way to Athens to say, we won, don't worry, they're not taking us over. Hooray, he falls down, collapses, and dies. The distance between Marathon and Athens, 26.2 miles. Today, we still commemorate this young man's courage and death. Why? That's why we run the Boston Marathon, Honolulu Marathon. And guess how far the marathon is? 26.2 miles. Now you know where it came from, 490 BC, the Battle of Marathon. See, if you wouldn't have come to church, you wouldn't have known that, huh? All right. Darius is killed there. He passes his baton to another king, and his name is Xerxes. Now, Xerxes has another name that's known in the Babylonian area, Persian, Medes. They have different names for the same kind of person. Well, his name is not only Xerxes, his name is Ahasuerus. Now, this is where we have the book of Esther in the Old Testament. Ahasuerus, or Xerxes, is now the king. Let me tell you what happens. Xerxes is a pretty strong king. He had a wife, or Ahasuerus. His wife is named Vashti. Now, Vashti must have been quite a looker because he's having this big old dinner party with tons of guests, and he says, get my wife so that I can sort of introduce her to all my guests. Well, sometimes Vashti would have mood swings. Like other women do, you know? Just talking. And so Ahasuerus says, Vashti, come so I can introduce... No, I'm not going anywhere, she says. I don't feel good. I feel fat. So he says, it doesn't matter. Just come. No, I'm not coming. He thought, what? What am I going to do? I asked my wife to come. I'm embarrassed in front of all these people. He talks to his counselors. You know what the counselors say? Banish her. Just banish her from the kingdom, because if she is allowed to do this, then all of the wives in the kingdom will figure they can do that. So banish her. He says, okay. I thought, that's not a bad idea, you know? And that's in the Bible, in the book of Esther. So that's what he does. He actually banishes her. Now you got a problem. What's that? No queen. So he holds a beauty pageant to choose his next queen. And one of the people that enters his beauty pageant is a young Jewish lady named Hadassah. Now, her uncle, actually it's her cousin, but is a man named Mardukah, which is actually his Babylonian name because there was a god named Marduk, and they called him Mardukah. or Mordecai is what we call him. Now, he is a part of the king's court because several years earlier, he himself had foiled an attempt to assassinate King Ahasuerus, or Xerxes. He foiled that, stopped the assassination, and the king thought, whoo, he's a good man. Bring him on staff. Well, this guy, Mordecai, is now on staff with the king. His niece is now in the beauty pageant. Lo and behold, she wins. Becomes queen, not Hadassah, but Esther. Esther. Another man in his kingdom was a man named Haman. Now, Haman was a prime minister, and this man was pretty proud. And he liked people bowing down to him. So he would ride through town, right down Main Street in his red Ferrari. And he would want people to bow, bow, bow. Well, everyone would bow when he'd go by except one, Mordecai. Mordecai would stand as he would go by, bow. And he wouldn't bow. Not because he despised or hated Haman, but more so because Mordecai was a Jew. And his scripture said, you bow down to no one as a god except the Lord himself. So it wasn't necessarily in disrespect to Haman as much as it was in great respect to the Lord God Almighty. But still, Haman was just incensed at this man. So he, being the prime minister, goes to the king and sort of deceives the king into signing an edict saying, let me take care of the Jews that are in the colonized area around Persia. Let me handle them. Not really letting the king know that when he would give him full authority to deal with the Jews, he was about to exterminate them all. Starting with Mordecai. Because actually he put up gallows in front of his own house, 75 feet tall. And with a noose at the top, and it would be around Mordecai's neck. He would be the first one to go to let the Jews know, teach them a lesson. I'm in charge. Well, the king, not knowing that that was his full intention, signs this. And as he's signing it, he says, hey, by the way, Haman, what should I do for someone that I'm really pleased with? Well, Haman's thinking, oh, that's me. That's me he's talking about. Well, what he doesn't know, he's talking about Mordecai. What do you think I should do? Whoa, he said, put that person on the king's steed and let him go down Main Street with the king's robes on. Let people applaud him. Ho, ho, ho. And King Ahasuerus says, good. Would you do that for Mordecai, please? Because you know what? He foiled an attempt of some people to assassinate me. And you know what? I haven't even sent him a thank you card. Man, do that. Well, Haman puts the king's robes on Mordecai, sends him down the street in the king's steed, and is just infuriated. That's it. He says, I'm killing them all. Well, this comes around to Mordecai. He hears about all of this, and he rushes into Esther. Esther, you're going to have to plead for us. You got to stop this edict because it's in the cards. This guy has got it all planned out. He's going to exterminate us all. She says, I can't just walk into the king's chambers. I'm just a new queen. He's got a call for me. And if I just walk into his chambers without an appointment or him summoning me, why, his guards are going to think it's another attempt to assassinate him. And they will kill me unless he quickly sees me at the far door and raises his scepter. What if he doesn't even see me? I'm dead. And Mordecai says, do you know what's in store if you don't rise up to this occasion? Let me tell you what's going to happen. We're dead. And at the top of our notes, would you read with me what Mordecai says to Esther? Let's read it. Go. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this. Would you underline relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place? Here's what Mordecai is saying. Esther, God's not going to let the Jews be exterminated because my scriptures tell me that out of this group of people will come the Messiah. So because the scriptures will be fulfilled and God makes no mistakes, I know that they will be delivered. But you and I may die in the process. But if you don't stand up for this, help and deliverance will arise from another place. But here's your choice. Do you want to be a part of that help and deliverance, or would you like to hand it off to somebody else? It's up to you. But maybe God has not raised you up for such a time as this. Esther says, you're right. Fast and pray. She then enters the king's chambers. He holds his scepter up to her. She reveals this whole plot. Ahasuerus is infuriated, calls Haman in, and says, is this what you did? You deceived me on this. You see the gallows you put up for Mordecai? You will be the first one to hang on it. Haman and his whole household is then destroyed. And still till this day, the Jewish people still celebrate on an annual occasion the feast called Purim. And that is to commemorate the one choice of one lady who saved not just her house, but the nation of Israel. One choice. Now, I want you to see with me what he was saying. He's saying, Esther, God's plans are already set, but you're going to have to make three singular choices in your life. Each choice will be huge, and it will determine everything about your life. And I'm going to take everything about what you've heard and boil it down, distill it to these singular choices. One choice. And what is that? He said, Esther, help and deliverance will arise because the scriptures will be fulfilled. It's sort of like God set everything in place. Everything that God, in the end, God's going to be found true. God's ways will come to pass. Man cannot compete or foil God's plans. It will come to pass. Question is, Esther, what part do you want to play in God's plan? Big part, small part, mediocre part, no part, neutral part? You tell me. She says, I want to play a big part. Good. Let's go forward. And because of that one choice, she affected the nation. And that same choice that Esther made, you will have to make. What is that? Here it is. Would you write down number one? Choose what part you will play in God's plan. Choose. What part do you want to play in God's plan? The scripture says this in Mark chapter 4. Would you read it with me? Just right under number one there. Go. The scriptures must be fulfilled. Underline, must be fulfilled. You see, in other words, Hebrews 4 says this, God's plans or the works of God were finished or it was established at the foundation of the world. In other words, God's plans are set, folks. We're not going to foil God's plans. I've read the end of the Bible. You know what it says? God wins. You might as well get that into your heart. He wins in the end. Now, there's all kinds of things that are going to take place, like redemption. Now, redemption, even for mankind, was set and established from the beginning of time. God already planned for salvation and redemption to be brought to mankind through the person of Jesus Christ. It's already planned. Now, it was also planned that there would be people who would love him, hate him, betray him from his own kind. They would run from him or they would follow him. They would ignore him. They would slander him. They would murder him. But still, God's redemption plan will take place. Now, although all of this is all set, what is not set is, what do you want to do in God's plan? What part would you like to play? Would you like to play a good part or a bad part? Would you like to play a big part or a small part? Mediocre part. Would you like to be on the healing side or would you like to be on the afflicting side? Would you like to be someone who betrays or someone who honors? There's room for everything. You can choose. Choose. In fact, he says that about Judas Iscariot. Let's read what it says here in Luke 22. Go. For indeed, the Son of Man is going as it has been determined. But woe to that man by whom he is betrayed. Yeah, you choose what part you want to play in God's plan. Let's read the next one. Go. He said to his disciples, it is inevitable that stumbling blocks come, but woe to him through whom they come. Yeah, you know what God is saying? I am going to help a bunch of people on this earth. I am going to bring families together. I am going to help people become all they were created to be. What part would you like to play? Would you like to be a part of the ones who are receiving the blessings of God or impeding the blessings of God? Those that follow Him or those that reject Him and go the other way? Do you want to pull against God or you want to pull with God? Do you want to cooperate with Him or not cooperate with? Do you want God to work with you or in spite of you? It's your choice. Did you know that you can choose? And God gives you the free will to choose. But in the end, folks, God wins. God's plans will come to pass. Mark it down, write it in ink, because it will. The scriptures must be fulfilled. They will.
You have just heard part one of a message entitled The Power of One Choice by Pastor Wayne Cordero of New Hope Christian Fellowship in Honolulu. We'll pick it up right there on tomorrow's broadcast. Thank you for listening to Words of New Hope. Until next time, for Pastor Wayne Cordero, this is Del Gibbs wishing you a great day in the Lord and aloha.
What if there were a place where you could discover, develop, and fulfill your dreams? That place is New Hope Christian College.
New Hope Christian College is a place where your teachers really do care about you, they want you to succeed, and they're willing to partner with you to do whatever it takes to make that happen.
The education that I've received at New Hope has really equipped me to graduate market ready.
For more information, go online to newhope.edu or call 1-800-322-2638. New Hope Christian College, a place where dreams are released.